Disaster, financial ruin, catastrophe and bankruptcy. We'll be turned out of our house. We'll be thrown into the streets. We'll be... No, Nancy, no. Calm yourself. Keep cool. Keep your mind crystal clear. Yes, Nancy. Certainly. Of course. Right, then. Very calmly, I'll explain. We moved to London from the countryside 3 months ago. The differences in the house prices made a considerable hole in Father's savings. Nonetheless, we felt secure in the safety of the income from his considerable and extensive investments. And then, oh my God, disaster, financial ruin. Something happened in Hong Kong or Japan or somewhere equally beastly miles and miles away from our local cake shop. And overnight, Father's investments became worthless. Calamity, catastrophe, oh, wretchedness. No, Nancy, no. Calm yourself. Keep cool. Remember how Lady Baden-Powell looked when she stepped in that dog dirt at Rottingdean? Right. As always, at moments of crisis, we held a family confab.
Oh, I love family confabs. Fearfully pleasant. Wake me up if anything interesting crops up.
Wake you up? What do you mean, wake you up? It's because of you that we're in this mess.
If you'd listened to your stockbroker and taken his advice, none of this would ever have happened.
Stockbroker, old boy, what stockbroker?
The stockbroker you have had this past 50 years, Father. Mm. The stockbroker who called you into his office 2 weeks ago to give you iced Madeira, rock buns and dire warnings about the state of your investments. And what happened? You got drunk in Soho with Winston and George Hables and completely forgot to go to his office.
Oh, I didn't forget to go to his office. It was just that we were in this pub, this boozer, having a sesh, and I bumped into one of my old chums from the India days.
But you've never been to India, Father.
Oh, that's precisely what he said, old boy. Pointed it out in no uncertain fashion. Anyway, by the time we'd finished our yarning and Winston had concluded his scrap with those two Norwegian merchant seamen, it was too late to go to the stockbroker's, so we went to the Lion's Corner House in Coventry Street. Had a Welsh rarebit, rice pudding with plum jam.
There's no Lion's Corner House in Coventry Street, Father. It does not exist.
Really? What a blasted nuisance.
I blame Winston for all this. I blame you. You bastard.
It had nothing to do with me, William. I was only the chauffeur, look. I just done what I was told. Your father, your old dad, love, he says, bugger the stockbroker, take me to one of them strip clubs where they has women with no clothes on.
It's a fearfully pleasant place, frightfully stimulating. The chairs were a bit hard, mind you, and I really didn't think the maid's flea should have been wearing knuckle dusters, but on the other hand, there was this charming young woman who looked remarkably like Princess May of Tech before she became Queen Mary. She got the tiniest feet I've ever seen in the whole of my life.
Yeah, and her doodahs was a bit on the ungenerous side, too. Mm. Reminded me, she did, of one of the nudes from the School of Botticelli, 1445 to 1510. Only she got nicotine stains up to her elbow.
Yeah, and there was this other delightful young lady who looked rather Welsh in appearance with no togs on, I thought. She'd got those typical bold, rapacious eyes and the distinctive colliers, low-slung buttocks.
I don't want to know, Father. I don't want to know. It's disgusting. It's obscene. And I hold you totally responsible, Winston. It's wicked to lead an old man astray like that.
Oh, Winston didn't lead me astray, old boy. I led him astray. Never been in an establishment like that before, had you, Winston?
Oh, that is true, my old wedgie bash. Oh, I did once went to an exhibition of Biedermeier nude daguerreotypes in Bradford-on-Avon at Court. Blimey, Charlie. You think Gustav Klimt's obsessed with knockers? Well, you just wait till you...
Shut up! I can't stand this talk. It's hateful. It's revolting. How are we going to cope? There is now no money coming into the house. Nothing. Not a single penny. How can we cope?
How on earth are we going to cope?
Simple, Nancy. I'll go back to my poaching. I keep telling you, bushy parties, even with deer, and I could earn a fortune flogging produce by appointment with the kitchen gardens at Hampton Court.
You are not doing any more poaching, Winston. How many more times have I to tell you? No poaching, no thieving, no logging on Wimbledon Common. Dear Lord above, can no one think of anything sensible? Is it beyond your powers to be practical and realistic about the situation? We are facing ruin. Look at this morning's mail. Bills, bills, more bills. What's
glasses. A letter for Miss Gerda Fortnoy, care of the old Dower House Winterleaf Gunner. What are they doing sending it to us? If I could afford the stamp, I'd get out my personalised notepaper and write a really strong letter of complaint to the authorities with my eyes flashing.
Give it to me.
What?
Give it to me. It's mine. I told them not to write to me here. I told them I... Well, don't look so surprised, all of you. Why shouldn't I get letters? Why shouldn't people write to me? I might have congenital sinuses, but it doesn't preclude people from communicating with me. I intend to take this letter to my study and read it in private. It's mine, this letter. It's all mine.
And with that, he left the room, clutching the letter to his irredeemably silly little chest. And there was a smile and a snicker on his face and a flush to the back of his neck.
Yes, and then this rather curious young creature joined us at our table. She was wearing roller skates, and it appeared to me she'd forgotten to put on her blouse. Well, she wasn't wearing a vest either. I thought of my duty to appraise her of the dangers of pleurisy and goose pimples.
Father.
Yes, Rosie?
Time to go. Come on, time to go.
She took him gently by the arm and led him out of the drawing room. It was time to go. It was time for his elevenses, and I'd prepared him a tray of cream crackers, gentleman's relish, and chilled tizer. I looked across at Winston. He smiled at me and winked. Dear, dear Winston, with his fat bruised belly and the blue-chipped gap between his two front teeth and his zapata moustache and the mild and bitter tattoos above his nipples. Winston, who loved me once underneath the great spread of the old beech tree at Winterleaf Gunner. Winston, who repaired our stench pipe and ironed the hems of my knickers and soaked Rosie's bras in user-friendly fabric softener. Dear, lovable, reliable, infuriating, exasperating, beguiling, irresistible Winston.
So what are we going to do, Winston?
Nothing.
What?
Yeah, you're making too much of a fuss, Nancy. There's nothing special about poverty, love. And I should know, good blimey, Charlie, I'm an expert on poverty. It has been in our family for generation after generation, handed down from father to son as part of our natural inheritance, love. Poverty have been endemic to us, like nits, cheating at cards, smoking in the bogs, and having bits of fluff on the side with badongas like rampant airships.
Winston!
No, don't look like that, Nancy, with your neck all blotchy. You've got to make the most of poverty, love. Wallow in its delights. Seek out the pleasures of its consolations.
What consolations?
Public libraries.
Public libraries?
Yes. Listen to me, Mrs. When you're poor, the only place you can be sure of finding peace and quiet, free from the bailiffs and the sounds of your latest ankle biter sucked into his mother's tits, is the public library. Well, there's nothing else to do there than try your socks on the radiators and read the great books from the Caucus of World Literature.
I don't follow you, Winston.
I am talking about reading biographies of the famous. Jackie Kennedy, for example. Would you have liked to have been Jackie Kennedy? I wouldn't. I'd look a bugger in high heels and I wouldn't be seen dead having congress with Aristotle Onassis. He'd have been far too demanding for me. And look at the Aga Khan.
What about the Aga Khan?
Well, would you like to be named after a cooker? I'm damned if I would. I'd refuse point blank to be called Hot Point Abel.
It's all very well being philosophical like that, Winston, but the harsh realities of life are that we are at grave risk of being thrown out into the streets without a penny piece to our name.
But no problem about that, Nancy. No worries at all. We'll buy a gypsy caravan and an old piebald horse and we'll wander the world, you and me. Look, we'll clop through the icy eras of inland Spain and throw stones at Lammergeier. We'll go meandering down the cool, leafy lanes of Normandy and make campfires on the banks of dusky Swedish lakes. We could always sell clothes pegs door to door in Wolverhampton.
I don't think I'm quite cut out to sell clothes pegs in Wolverhampton, Winston. And I'm certainly not cut out to be poor. I went to private boarding school on the south coast, you know, when I was a little girl. I was engaged to a pilot in the RAF, and he took me to point-to-point races in East Anglia and Battle of Britain gala nights at the officers' mess. I've been to Florence and visited the Prado.
The Uffizi, Nancy.
What?
Well, it's the Uffizi what's in Florence, Nancy. The Prado, he's in Madrid, look, that he is, without a doubt.
I don't care where the Prado is. All I care about is not being poor. I refuse to be poor, Winston. And then William walked into the room. He pounded in. He was grinning like a slit in a wizened turnip. And he was cackling.
I'm rich! I'm rich! I'm rich! I'm rich! I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to buy myself a Harley Davidson and the complete records of Benny Goodman. I'll buy myself a Dartford tunnel and I'll bring back my Schneider trophy for England. I'm rich. I'm rich.
William, what on earth is the matter with you? William, will you stop that maniacal cackling at once? Thank you. What is all this childish, stupid behaviour about?
I'm rich.
So you've said, William, so you've said. And now perhaps you wouldn't mind telling us exactly why you're rich.
Because I'm Gerda Fortnoy.
What?
I took your advice, Winston.
My advice? I didn't tell you to change into a woman, William. You ain't got childbearing hips, and your voice ain't loud enough, neither.
No, no, Winston. I'm talking about the advice you gave me regarding my writing career. Well, I've taken it, and I've written a bucky book.
What?
I wrote a bucky book last year, and they've written to say they've sold the film rights to Hollywood, and I'm going to be rich! I'm rich! I'm rich!
I swear, if he doesn't come back cackling, I shall get the creeping scissors from my staying room and hurry home!
William! William, if he doesn't stop that cackling, look, I shall personally smash you on the end of your nose, pull your fingernails out one by one, and pour you alive in a vat of tomato ketchup.
And I don't like tomato ketchup, neither.
Worcester sauce! Shut up! Right then, my old Wingsy Pash. In your own time, tell us what happened. What has occurred.
Well, you told me ages ago that I wouldn't get anywhere writing books about railways, that I'd never, ever achieve fame and fortune as sleep between black silk sheets in Montmartre and dance naked on the beach at Martha's Vineyard. So I wrote a bucky book. I didn't want you lot to know, so I used the name Gerda Fortnoy. Well, it was published last year, and it died to death. Nothing happened. I thought it was a total failure. That's why I didn't bother to tell the publishers I'd moved to London. And now they've written and told me the news! Whoopee! Whoopee!
William!
Sorry. All I want to say is that they've sold the film rights to Hollywood, the book's going to be published in America, and I've been invited to the Woman of the Year luncheon at the Savoy Hotel.
Great. What are you going to wear?
What?
Well, you've got to look your best at that lunch, Gerda. You'll need a new rig outlook, and you'll need a mud pack on your mush piece to get rid of that shaving rust. Tell you what I'll do. I'll just nip into the backyard and get a dollop of that manure old George Abel's got me free and greatest from the pickery. Won't be a bowl, Gerda.
Don't call me Gerda. I'm William, and I'm rich, and... Oh, Nancy. Nancy, all our problems are solved.
What do you mean?
I'm in the money, Nancy. We're all in the money. We're not poor anymore. And we can stay on here and live like lords with smoke detectors in every room and a fax machine in every bedroom.
And a port wine flush in the bog.
Of course. And we'll have iced champagne in the summer. And oh, Nancy, I'm so happy.
Wait a minute, William. Am I right in thinking that you are actually going to share your money with us?
Of course.
But you've never shared anything in the whole of your life. When you were a little boy, your pencil box positively bristled with padlocks. When you got your first racing bike, you used to go to bed with your pump and saddleback tucked up under your pillow. And you made Father keep the tire levers in his safe. Even now, you sit in the corner of the drawing room all night gorging yourself on Pontefract cakes. And never once do you offer one to the rest of the family.
I know, but it's all changed now, Nancy. I'm a best-selling authoress, and I've got confidence. I've suddenly seen the world in a new light. I've woken up to my responsibilities. I've got to support my family.
Well, it does you great credit, William.
Thank you. Mind you, there are going to have to be some minor changes in personnel in the household.
Oh, I see. I might have known it. Goodbye, William. Tar very much for teaching me how to French kiss in theory, Winston, but now you can sling your hook, Winston.
No, Winston. You've got it wrong. I'm not throwing you out. How could I, when it was you encouraged me to write my bucky book? I couldn't throw you out.
Then who are you going to throw out, William?
Father.
What?
I've got to throw Father out, that's it. Imagine it. We're going to be free of Father. We'll bug him in a home, and for the first time in our lives, we won't have him in our hair, whining, complaining, disparaging, moving us on all over the country from house to house, droning on and on with his ghastly, interminable stories about India, and spilling cream cracker crumbs in my typewriter. Nancy, we're going to be free of Father.
Later that morning, I told Rosie what William had said. She was appalled. She was outraged.
Father can't go into a home. It would kill him.
I know.
He couldn't survive without us.
I know.
His whole life has been devoted to making our lives an out-and-out misery.
I know, Rosie, I know. But what can we do? William is adamant. If we don't allow Father to be bunged into a home, he'll scoop up his money, shoot off and away, and leave us totally in the lurch.
Well, I don't want his bloody money. Let him stuff it in his limp little saddlebag and disappear in a puff of rattling tyre levers. We'll manage on our own, Nancy. We will, we will.
But how, Rosie?
I don't know. How should I know? Maybe we could go back to Winterleaf Gunner. Maybe we could become assistant poachers and procurers of bits of fluff for Winston.
Oh, Rosie, Rosie, what a mess! Half an hour later, Father shuffled into the room, puffing happily at his pipe. He was followed by William, who was looking distinctly agitated.
Oh, hello, chaps. I have just been having the most fearfully interesting chinwag with old Gerda here.
Don't call me Gerda. I'm William. He keeps calling me Gerda.
Well, that's what I thought the whole point of the conversation was. You told me you'd changed your name and wanted to be called Gerda. Damn good name, boy, too.
What?
Well, I've always thought you were highly suspicious, old boy.
What do you mean, highly suspicious?
Well, highly suspicious on the shirt-lifting front.
Shirt-lifting? What do you mean?
Well, it all stemmed from when you were a baby and took no interest in your mother's golfing activities in Hoylake. And you never once played with that machete I bought you on your fourth birthday. And it was a complete waste of time buying you that brass diver's helmet when you were five. All you wanted to do was play with Rosie's dolls and make barrage balloons out of Nancy's bloomers.
Are you inferring that I... Are you suggesting that I'm a... I did not play with Rosie's dolls. I played with my Horby tray set and my dinky toys and my waterproof torch in the bath with the lights out and... He doesn't understand, does he? I've told him everything. I've told him of our plans. I've mapped them out in meticulous detail. And he doesn't understand... You don't understand a single word, do you, Father?
Yes, of course I do. You've written a mucky book about the railways in Hollywood. You're rich. You've had a sex change operation. And now we're going to move to a new house.
Oh.
Well, what about Altrincham in Cheshire? Anyone fancy Altrincham? When I was in India with your mother, I once knew a theatrical costumier from Altrincham in Cheshire. He was rather like William in a way. Used to dress up in nun's habit and insist on being called Sister Sydney.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lummy. And I always thought I could cope. I always thought I was indestructible. That evening, Winston took Rosie and me out in our car, our motor, our bottle green Volvo estate. He was wearing the new pink corduroy suit I'd bought him as a present for saving the house from being burned down. He did look handsome. He did look manly. He had a vaguely familiar smell to his cheeks and his neck. I wrinkled my nostrils. Good grief! It was my perfume. It was the scent I'd bought at the duty-free shop on that ghastly ferryboat when we took William to see the engine sheds at San Marlo. I turned to Winston furiously, but I couldn't say anything. He was sitting in the driver's seat, all relaxed and radiant with good humour and good health, and he was whistling a chirpy little tune through the blue-chip gap between his two front teeth. You could fall in love with a man for less than that. He took us to this pub. It had oak beams and horse brasses and a garden leading straight down to the river.
It was a small river. It wasn't the Thames. It was more a tributary with water lilies nodding in the slack of the water and moorhens skulking in the reeds.
What a super pub, Winston. How did you find it?
My cousin George Abels brought me. It's where him and his colleagues from the police hold their after our drinking sessions. That's how I come to meet all the villains in the neighbourhood.
Villains, Winston? Drinking with the police?
Yeah, of course, Nancy. That's what we call, in the legal trade, symbiosis, look. And you get all the top drawer villains here. Bank robbers, safe blowers, con men, solicitors, members of parliament, professional footballers. Very nice people they are, too. You could leave your old mum here and guarantee she wouldn't be mugged or have her dentures nicked when she bent down to kick a cat. Mind you, I couldn't bank on my old mum doing the same for them, look.
Do you know, Winston, I was brought up in the city. I've worked in the city. I've travelled all over the city, and never once have I been in a pub like this.
Well, trust Winston for that, Rosie.
That's right, lady. You trust old Winston for everything, and you'll never come to no harm. Well, I've read all the collected works of Gerard Manley Hopkins, haven't I? And they wasn't nicked neither, look.
It grew softly into the dusk. Bats hunted, swallows darted. A car alarm went off, and I said,
what are we going to do with Father, Winston?
There's not a lot you can do, Nancy. You ain't got money, has you? William has. So, if he wants to go on staying in your house with your mother's badminton cups and the foxes snuffing through your dustbins, you got to let William have his way and bum your old dad in home.
But that's terrible, Winston. It's an awful thing to do to an old man.
No, it ain't. It's the main commitment of growing old, having awful things done to you.
Why?
Because when you grows old and starts sucking your ear in aid in public and setting fire to your trouser bottoms and dropping your loose change in the sub post office, them people what's younger than you are doesn't want to know. You're a bloody nuisance. You keeps reminding them of what they're going to be like when they grows old. The women takes to themselves, God, blimey, Charlie, will I turn into an old crone like that with great folds of scrawny skin on my neck and swollen ankles? And queuing up for half-price perms on Senior Citizens Night at the hairdressers, and the bloke he thinks to himself, God blimey, Charlie, and set fire to it. I'm going to end up not knowing who won the FA Cup final in 1958, forgetting how to write up a Yankee at the bookies and thinking it was William Blake what wrote Gray's Elegy in a country churchyard. Even the dog do growl at you when you grows old. He do look at you with them slinky eyes of his. And you knows that given half a chance, he'll bury you at the bottom of the garden next to the bones he's just nicked from your Sunday joint. So, there's only one thing for young folks to do. Bung their elders in a home and forget all about them.
That's a disgusting thing to say, Winston. It's obscene.
Is it, Nancy? What do you think, Rosie? What do you think deep down, my lovely girl?
I think... Oh, God, who's going to tell Father?
What? You, Rosie, you? You're going to give in to William?
I'm fed up of fighting, Nancy. I want a bit of peace and quiet in my life. I want a bit of space. I want the security of knowing that we're going to stay in one place for more than 12 months. I want to make friends and have neighbours and crack jokes with the milkman and have rows with a regular postman. I want the tranquility of knowing that I can wake up in the morning without hearing the crunch of cream crackers being dunked in calf's foot jelly, without smelling burning cardigans and smouldering duvets, without having to force open the lavatory door every 5 minutes with a poddy drive because Father's... Oh, I don't know. I don't know, Nancy. I just don't know.
Neither do I. So who's going to tell Father?
I will.
Oh, Winston, will you? Will you really?
Yeah, of course I will. You just leave it to old Winston.
We drove home. We went into the kitchen. William was sitting at the table doing sums in a black leather pocketbook and smirking. We sat down. Winston said,
right then, I'll be off to break the news to your old dad.
Be gentle with him, Winston. Be tactful, won't you?
Of course I will, Nancy. Don't you fret about that, my lovely, tasty lady with your firm, straight nose and your springy black hair.
I watched from the kitchen as he loped his slow, steady, stately countryman's walk to the shed at the bottom of the garden.
Come on in, it's only me.
Even then, what do you reckon? Not a lot.
No, Winston, old chap, take a pew. Now, what can I do for you, old boy?
I brought you some news, look.
Oh, splendid. What news?
They're going to bung you in home for old people.
I say, old boy. And has he got tip-top ablutions facilities?
Oh, I should think so, without a doubt. You'll like it there. It'll be like what it was when you was in India. You'll be able to play billiards in a nude.
Of course.
You'll be able to wear your singlet in bed and have a good old fart in the bath, regardless of the consequences.
Oh, utopia, old boy.
And there'll be women, too.
Will there, really?
Better be, without a doubt.
Will Mrs. Cross Lewington be there?
Beg pardon?
Mrs. Cross Lewington. When we lived in Bombay, your mother and I, she ran a home for distressed tram conductors.
Oh.
Fearfully handsome woman. We once went to dinner, and after port, she took me alone into her salle privée. Well, I thought she was going to show me how to work a ticket punch, but it didn't turn out that way.
No? How did it turn out, then?
Oh, I can't remember, old boy. A great many things happened to me in India when I was young and in my prime. Oh, I used to like being young. I was good at it, you see. I played my part at being young. I had desires in the bath. I was a keen rambler. I liked making dams in mountain streams. I liked the smell of shaving soap. I liked two slim ankles, gold bangles round dusky ankles, an olive skin, and lips pouting with promise. Oh, those were the days, old boy.
Yes, them were the days, right enough. And you ain't got no more of them left now, has you?
No, worse luck.
And so you understand, for that reason, though, what I'm telling you, don't you?
Oh, yes.
In that case, then, repeat after me. I am going to be bunged.
I'm going to be bunged.
Into an old folks' home.
Into an old folks' home.
Poor old sod.
Poor old sod.
Come on, then. Let us go and tell the others that you have finally cottoned on and twigged on in addition as to what is about to happen.
Certainly, old boy. Be my guest.
They came into the kitchen, and Father waved his pipe to us in cheery greeting, and Winston said,
"Well, then you can relax easy, can't you? All your troubles is over. Your old dad has finally reconciled himself to his fate and his future, and that is without a doubt.
Thank goodness for that. Well then, Father, what do you think?"
"No, I think it's a splitting idea, old boy. New house where Nancy and Rosie can play snooker in the nude all day long in their birthday shoots, and I can go pig-sticking and rambling with Mrs. Cross Lewington. It's wonderful. Are you coming too, will you?"
"Oh, my lord. Oh, my lummy."
"He hasn't understood a bloody word. He hasn't..." "Wait a minute, Father. What's that book you've got under your arm?"
"Oh, that is a ghastly load of garbage, old boy. Found it lying around under the swivel chair in your study. Hollywood Mistresses by a chap called Gerda Fortnoy. The one who wrote that wants thrashing within an inch of her life. Look, oh, God, just look at this first page. Herminet Lagruyere took one long look at the producer's couch in shimmering, glistening, sun-streaked sealskin and said to her, anything wrong, sir?"
"Oh, Father, what on earth are we going to do with you?"
"Well, I don't know. Repeat after me. Oh, Father, what on earth are we going to do with you?"
"Poor old sod.
Poor old sod.